This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Hello, listeners. My name is Vanessa, the host of the Unseminary Podcast, where we talk about the stuff you wish they taught in seminary. I'm joined by the founder of Unseminary, Rich Birch. Hey, Rich, how are you?
Well, the question really is how you're doing. We missed you last week. I had to do this all by myself, and it was painful. Now, you were feeling sick. How are you feeling today?
I'm on the mend, feeling a little bit better, a little congested, sore throat, but I've got my tea beside me, and that's going to fuel me through this.
Nice. What kind of tea are you drinking?
Peppermint.
Ooh, a little peppermint tea. Nice. That's great.
Because there is snow on the ground.
That's true. We got snow today, which was crazy. So I'm hoping it doesn't stay though. I think it'll probably burn off here, but it's true. There is snow on the ground. Well, today, the title of today's article is Six Dirty Secrets About Multisite Churches That Almost No One is Talking About. We're talking about multisite churches today.
Except we're talking about it.
I know.
Some of our listeners might not know this, but you have actually been super involved in multi-site churches in your career.
Yeah, it's true. Actually, you know, way back to the early 2000s, I remember, so I was involved in a church in Toronto called The Meeting House, and we launched our first campus 2001, 2002. And I remember at that point interacting, there's this guy, Greg Ligon out there, shout out to Greg, who is really kind of, he's one of these behind the scenes guys that really is knows everything there is to know about multi-site. And he works for an organization called Leadership Network. And I remember at that point, so this is whatever that is, 16 years ago, talking to him, and he was saying that there was a dozen churches they had found that were multi-site, which seemed crazy at the time. I'm like, that's ridiculous. It seems very bizarre to me. But you know, today there's over 1,000 churches who are on who do multi-site campuses. And the last number I heard was somewhere around 5 million people who attend multi-site churches every weekend. So it really has gone from, and I would have never guessed if you would have asked me all those years ago how many people, you know, I'd be like, well, maybe there'll be 100 of these someday. But the fact that there's 1,000 of them and so many people is crazy. And then, yeah, over the years worked at Kinexus, the church we currently go to. And then for almost eight years was at a church in New Jersey called Liquid Church. And so the Meeting House went from, when the time I was there, went from one location to six. We're going to talk a little bit about this later, went from one location to six. I think today there are 19 locations.
That's incredible.
If I'm counting correctly. And then we're still working on our third here. We're hopefully going to launch our third at Kinexus. And then at Liquid Church, same thing. I was involved there from one location to there'll be six, coming on seven. And then actually I think eight's coming pretty close right after that. So, so in that range, so which is kind of fun.
That is fun. Yeah. I'm excited to see, I have never been part of a launch before, so it'll be exciting to journey through this with Kinexus as we launch our third campus. And, This really leads into our first point that 85% of multi-site churches aren't launching more than two locations. Why is that?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, it's funny, like at our church, there's basically been a 10-year gap between when we mm-hmm. launched our first two locations and now working on our third. And so I'm back involved here now. I've been bugging Carrie and Jeff, our two lead guys. I'm saying, come on, people, we got to get this thing out the door. Obviously, it has nothing to do with me, but I'm excited about the third location. But, you know, so yeah, this isn't just like, you know, 62% of all statistics are made up. This is like a true statistic. 85% of all multi-site churches don't go beyond two locations. There's a study done by Leadership Network. I referenced them earlier. You know, I think there's a couple reasons why. It could be that the movement's still young enough that people, it takes them a while to get to, like us, it took us a while to get to the third, but I think our fourth and fifth will probably come quickly thereafter. But I really think that the main reason is this, that most multi-site churches launch campuses as opposed to launching a system for launching campuses. So they really just get obsessed with getting one out the door or getting two out the door. They don't step back and think, how do we do a lot of these? How do we kind of build an approach that will allow us to consistently do this?
Yeah, that's really interesting. Like I said, it's something that I'm new to. And so, are you okay?
Yeah, I am. Just pushing my headphones in because I wanted to make sure I could hear.
Okay. So it's just been really interesting on my end to be able to watch, from two locations to three, and to think of the Meeting House having 19 locations and spreading that gospel is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, when I look back at that, you know, we launched one location. So we had one location, and then we launched our first campus, so like our second location total. And after doing that, we made the like audacious goal of launching one campus a year for 5 years, which looking back on it, we had no business doing that. We had no idea what we were doing. It was a very kind of out there goal. It seemed crazy. And actually looking back on it seemed even crazier. But the thing that actually what it did was it forced us to not just think about, okay, what are we going to do to launch the next campus, but actually how do we build a system for launching campuses? How do we build an approach that allows us to kind of consistently look at that? And so they really the initial goal was one a year for 5 years. And actually now that they're, you know, 19 campuses in, they've actually averaged more than one a year over these last years. And they continue to look at new campuses. And the only reason why that is because they built both systems and a culture that says, hey, we're the kind of church that launches campuses on a regular basis.
So when you're looking at building a system, then are you looking at building a permanent facility, or are you looking at, hey, where can we pop up shop for a couple hours on a Sunday morning and run with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, most churches are, you know, the high majority of multi-site churches that launch start in some sort of rented facility. That's just a common thing. You know, something like 2/3 end up in a rented facility when they first start out. And, you know, when we're talking about system here, it's really about kind of a common approach. It's about saying, well, what time of year is ideal for us to launch? And when, you know, what is the way, you know, that we acquire volunteers to make this thing happen? And how do we talk about it internally? And how do we fund it? And all of those various pieces, how do we do all that, you know, across, you know, multiple years, rather than just saying, well, what are we going to do to get this next campus out the door? Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. So in your experience, when is the best time to launch a campus?
Oh, that's a good question. So actually, one of the interesting things that's happened, if you talk to the people who support multi-site churches, so there's an organization called Portable Church, which is a company that they really help churches do the portable thing in and out of rented facilities. They help a lot of multi-site churches. They would say what's happened over the last 10 years or 15 years is it's gone from, you know, it was kind of spread throughout the year, but really what's happened is it's focused now on the fall. So the kind of fall time frame, usually sometime October, November is the most popular. Second most popular is in the new year, say January. And then third really is spread throughout the rest of the year. There's Easter and then summertime. But the fall by far is the most popular season for churches launching, which I think makes sense. It's kind of get back to school. And so many of our churches are driven by school calendars. And then when we launch at that time of year, you get the benefit of Christmas and the new year. New Year's is a big kind of return to church time, which is a good thing. And the, you know, the lead up to that next summer, because that first summer can be a tough one because it's like there's a drop off. And so you want to give yourself a long runway to get to that point.
Yeah, I guess it's good, really good to leverage that season and, you know, expect that you're going to have those big numbers out, hopefully retain some of those people leading into the summer where, yeah, like you said, people are going to drop off, right?
Totally,
busy schedules,
absolutely.
Holidays, all of that.
Absolutely.
So in all of this, our next point is talking about finding a campus pastor. And you say that's really hard.
Yeah, it's actually really, really hard is what I say in the post. Yeah, you know, when I think about it over the years, this piece of the puzzle, and I, you know, I've had all these conversations, whether it's at conferences or you know, even just people calling me up. And there's like, this is a little bit of the dirty secret of the multi-site movement that finding and acquiring campus pastors is hard. You know, the training, releasing, rewarding them, you know, ultimately keeping them, it is an incredibly difficult task. And when I think about the most kind of personally painful or the parts of this that have caused, say, a certain amount of, you know, internal friction with people over the years, it really is this issue, finding the people to lead these. And we're finding this in our current launch at Kinexus, right? We're launching here in January, and Jeremy, an existing campus pastor, is kind of identified as he'll be there through the spring, but we don't have a campus pastor on the ground there yet who's going to be in that campus long-term. And that, you know, is that kind of big idea is impacting us even just in our one little church here.
So should we start looking within the church then to find our next campus pastor, or what do we do? How do churches going through this find someone?
Yeah. So this is really the part I don't live with a lot of regret. I don't think regret's a great thing to have in life. Like it's, you know, it's like, hey, life happens, you learn, and then you grow from it. But there's probably the closest thing to a regret when I think about leading in within a multi-site movement would be this. So again, study from Leadership Network that looked at campus pastors and said, where are people finding campus pastors? So 87%. 87% of all campus pastors come from within the church. So they're people who are actually already existing at your church. And so the thing I would encourage, you know, listeners who are listening in today that are thinking about launching a new site, that really your campus pastor is already attending your church. It's someone who's already sitting in your pews, sitting in one of your environments, or he's already volunteering, she's already volunteering. And you know, what we need to do is actually identify those people. When I think about, it's actually a little bit embarrassing. Think about all the time, effort, and energy and money we spent over the years to attract campus pastors from outside the church. Man, if we would have spent all that on identifying, training, and releasing people from within the church, I think we would have been much better off. And, you know, ultimately, you know, I would say there is anecdotal evidence that campus pastors that are found from within the congregation actually have a better stick rate. They tend to be, you know, more committed to the, you know, the mission long-term. There's a whole other conversation we could have on that, but that, you know, really that is the best place for you to be looking for campus pastors. Now it's harder. I think in some ways we look we're like, let's just find somebody who's already doing something like this. They're maybe three communities away. Let's hire them to come over and do this. As opposed to saying who's already with us that we can develop towards that. And this is even more so for the churches. These all start to kind of work together for churches that are able to get beyond three locations. If you stare into a place like the Meeting House, or, you know, which a lot of people wouldn't know, but if you think about Life Church in the States, who are at, 30 locations or something, some huge number like that. If you look at what they're doing to find campus pastors, it's really about developing people from within. They've almost exclusively find their people while they've 90% of them, almost 90% of them are found from within. And so the issue is really, how do we develop people and how do we find them and release them, which is tough to do.
That is really tough to do. I can't imagine. I mean, it's kind of a catch-22. Are you going to sit there and go through a bunch of resumes from an ad that you've had, mm-hmm. and interviews and all the time invested in that? Or are you going to take that energy instead and focus on who's within our church right now that we can develop? Right. And that still is a lot of energy and focus as well, mm-hmm. I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, I think in some ways it's like the development work of developing people internally is harder, and it's not, you know, we may have candidates within our church today that were like, I just don't know. Like, I'd rather somebody who's fully baked, as opposed to saying, no, we just actually need to develop people who are here. We need to take time to say, how do we take people from where they are today to where we need them to be to lead these campuses?
And so when you look at potentially hiring somebody that's come from another church coming into yours, or finding somebody within the church, do you think it's easier to develop somebody who's never been in a position like that before, to mold them into, like, in my head, I would think yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a
good
question.
They're already living that vision and mission, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is an interesting trend as well, which is, again, probably for a whole other podcast, around what makes a great campus pastor. And then also, you know, this idea of people coming from within the, you know, marketplace roles, folks that are doing, you know, things that are, you know, they're not in your kind of traditional vocational ministry roles and coming in. And we're for sure seeing that within the multi-site movement, that there's a lot of leaders that have ended up as campus pastors or leaders within multi-site churches that, you know, they used to be an owner operator of a Chick-fil-A, or they used to be, you know, they were a real estate agent, or they were, you know, maybe they were doing something in their community already. And then, you know, they sensed a call from God and kind of said, hey, I want to be a part of that. And then the question became, how did they develop the skills required to make a difference in their church?
Yeah, that's really interesting. So we're going to kind of switch gears a little bit.
Sure.
So we talk next about older locations' ability to reach people slows over time. And so my question is, how do you avoid that? How can you continue pushing that older church or older location to still grow while still putting energy into your new launch?
Yeah, so great question. So again, it's not just my opinion. A guy named Warren Bird, again, from Leadership Network, who, have, as I said earlier in the article, really are the people who have done an amazing job just really forming and helping the multi-site church movement understand itself. He did this great study where he kind of proved something that we were seeing, that basically as campuses get older, now the irony of that is that the benchmark for old in his campus is 5 years old. And so, you know, which in most churches doesn't seem very old at all, but actually there is a line you can actually see on effectiveness that drops around 5 years. And some of this I think makes sense. There's like the idea of like the shiny new car syndrome. There is a segment of people who like to go to things that are new. And so people are attracted to that. So how do we push against that? I think is a question. That's a very good question. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a part of what we need to do is understand that the leaders that are required, or what's required of leaders early on in a multi-site church, is different than those that are there long-term. And so, you know, our campus, the campus you and I attend, has been around for 10 years. And so it's been there for quite a while. And that requires a different kind of leadership than in those early days, you know, and so what does that look like? Trying to understand that, thinking that through, trying to figure out what does that look like, you know, is it's a little bit of acknowledging that that's an issue, and then trying to build your leaders or train your leaders, you know, a little bit, you know, differently as you, you know, you wrestle through that. I think that, you know, sorry, you're gonna ask a question.
I was, but, so with that, then is there, is that something that you can create to be systematic then? So as you're, you know, if say you look at the Meeting House where there was a goal to launch one church every five or every year for 5 years. So, can you create it to be systematic so that your older, locations are still growing while still pushing? How can you keep that going? Because eventually you're just going to have older locations as you keep growing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a good question. There are oftentimes you'll see in churches that are, again, breaking the 8, 9, 10 barrier of, you know, number of campuses. There usually is a team or a person that is identified as a, in that kind of launching role. They spend their time thinking about getting new campuses out. That just is a different kind of leadership than someone that's been around for a long time. And so you end up kind of specializing even through the life of the church. There may be someone who's there for a year or two and you first get launched and then it gets switched over. I've seen that in a number of churches where it kind of switches, you know, long-term. I think the other piece of it is to even just acknowledge that there is this natural slowdown that, you know, as a campus becomes 4 or 5 years old, it's not like you should get discouraged leaders who are in a campus that's older, but just realize that is actually a dynamic. And so what you need to do is say, okay, what do we need to do to kind of restart that impact? How do we, you know, what do we need to do to try something different, to, you know, do our own kind of rebirth from within, that in some ways makes us new. In fact, I was talking to a campus pastor recently who, you know, they were seeing this at their campus, and, what they did, which they saw kinds of energy, come out of it, was they actually did their multi-site, location. They have a physical building. And so, you know, their campus is only, I think, 4 years old, 3, 4 years old in that range. And what they decided to do was that, you know what, we're going to for this fall, we're going to redo a bunch of the interior of the building. We're going to repaint some stuff. They kind of changed around their coffee. They fixed some stuff in the kids' environments. They freshened it up. Now, if you and I were to walk into that location before they did this, you wouldn't be like, oh, wow, this is a tired building. But for just the fact that for their own people, that they kind of redid things, they made it new again. What that did was invigorate their community, and it was an excuse to get volunteers plugged in. And it was ultimately, you know, it ultimately gave people an excuse to talk about, you know, the church to their friends. Hey, we tried some new stuff. You should come check it out, which then ultimately they saw this fall has actually seen an increase in their attendance. They're running higher than they've seen in the past. So, and again, I think rather than getting defeated, like, oh, it's, yeah, man, we're seeing a slowdown, this campus pastor embraced that and said, yeah, what do we need to do to kind of rebirth? What do we need to do differently as an older campus?
So a church leader, potentially, if you have a deflated leader in the church that's in an older location, and you want to ignite that spark, could you then potentially move them to the new location and then bring somebody new in to that has that energy to revitalize that church? Is that something that our listeners could do?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can, and some of it is absolutely the way you manage those people and what we're kind of getting them to think about, you know, encouraging them to kind of be entrepreneurs again, encouraging them to come up with new ideas. I think the other part of this, it's kind of just the other end of the same stick, is the early months and years of the launch of a new campus are critically important. So, you know, in other environments, I've said, listen, you're going to have more first-time guests in your first day than you will in your first month, in your first month than you will in your first 3 months, in your first 3 months than you will in your first year, in your first year, you know, than in your first 3 years. And that's just true. Like we have to hit the ground running, you know, and really work to hit our growth trajectory early on in a campus. That's not just like hyper growth guy who's interested in thinking about that. That's just actually true, that early on it's important. And you can see that in the life of a lot of campuses where, you know, they maybe launch out of the gate and they're, you know, when you look where they are 4 or 5 years later, they're not that much different than where they were, say, after the first year. You know, the growth rate slowed down. And so how do we take advantage of that in the early days? Again, that's kind of the opposite end of the stick of this one comment, but it's connected to this.
Yeah, that's interesting. So now we're going to move into talking about the size and the health of your launch team is the key success factor. So I guess like we're just talking about our volunteers and making sure that they're healthy and ready to do this. Yeah, this is a big project.
Yeah, it is a big deal. So I've been in the middle of 14 different launches where, you know, I've been directly responsible for, you know, acquiring those volunteers. Actually, funny statistics. So I need to actually nail down this number. It's something around 1500 volunteers that I've been able to recruit to launch new campuses, which is great. But when you look at the combined attendance of those campuses today, it's somewhere over 8,000, close to 9,000 people that attend those campuses today. So it's kind of been cool to see that. It's a huge multiplication factor. And when I look back at all those 14 campuses, there's been a lot of factors like what has made these things work. Campus pastors, you know, locations, time of year, all of it. There's been different things, but I can say, having watched it firsthand, that really the health and size of the launch team is critically important. And I guess it just makes sense. The more people you have on the core team, the more, you know, friends that will get invited to the campus, the more people that you have, there's a virtuous loop that happens there. The more people volunteering actually reduces the volunteer load on any individual volunteer, which actually makes it easier to get more people to serve, which then ultimately makes it even more easier to get people to serve. So it becomes and then obviously the, you know, more people that are plugged into the launch, just it helps the financial side of it. You know, the more financial resources there are to sustain the campus. Now, you know, there's a number of different ways, and it really, this is, takes, you know, looking specifically at an individual church's, kind of growth pattern and what they're trying to accomplish in multi-site and all that. But the size, the kind of punchline for everyone is they should be looking at a larger launch core than probably makes them comfortable. You know, they need to be thinking about, like, if they think they can recruit 75, they need to be pushing to 100. If they think they can recruit 100, they really should be thinking about 150, because actually the principle there is the more you have, and then the healthier that group is, the just stronger the launch will be. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, that does make sense. And so when you're thinking of this launch team, are you looking at people within the multiple locations? Are you looking at just one location to help push this? Where can you find these volunteers?
Oh, that's a great question. So interesting. Again, this comes across the board, not only the campuses I've been involved in, but actually this pattern, this number actually is persistent across studies. But we're finding that 2/3 of the volunteers who are serving in the new campus have never served with the church before. So they've never been involved in leadership at the church. So it's not just about finding existing volunteers and saying, hey, will you join us to go to this new thing. It's really about building a process to find people in multiple locations. So it could be, a lot of times you'll have like one campus that draws a significant number, just because of location, physical location, you're moving closer to that location. But you'll also find people just by, you know, raising a flag and saying, hey, we're going into this location. You'll find people who will get attracted to the church and attracted to serving there just because you're in that location. They may not even connect to your church today. And so that's another reason for kind of a longer launch process rather than taking 3 or 4 months. You know, my recommendation, what I've seen work really well, is more like a 10, 12 month launch window, which gives you a long enough time to move people who actually are more like, and there's a whole other conversation we can have around here, more that, you know, they're really late adopters or maybe even early laggards, people that when they first hear about the launch, they're not like, oh, that sounds like a great idea. They actually might be resistant. Those are actually the people that you want, because the trick here on this is those people that are a little bit more late adopters or early laggards, those people are actually more likely to stick with the campus long-term, which is really what the goal here is. What we don't want to do is find, so this is a very long answer to give you a very short, you know, line, but what you want to do is you want to get people that are closer to your location. I've seen churches do this thing where they're like, they say like, hey, be a missionary for 3 months and go to this location. I know it's even farther a drive for you to go and, help us in the launch. The problem with that is after 3 months, guess what happens? Those people don't serve anymore. they're tired. They're happy to serve for those 3 months and then they pull out, which really isn't good for the long-term health of the campus. What you want to do is find a strong volunteer course. My recommendation is somewhere between 150 and 175. And there's a whole reason why for that, but we don't need to get into that today. Somewhere between 150, 175 people to launch that location, which ultimately, if you focus on finding that core, you don't need to worry about who's going to attend the campus. You don't need to worry even as much about marketing and all that stuff, because if you can find enough people to volunteer and convince enough people to volunteer, they'll tell their friends who will tell two friends who will tell two friends, and the campus, you know, kind of the growth will happen in those early days because of that.
Yeah, we've for sure seen that through our launch right now.
Yep.
So is it, I mean, as simple as just standing up and announcing, hey, we're going to launch this new church. Do you want to be a part of it? Come talk to us after.
No,
is it that simple?
No, it's not. It takes a lot of work. And there's, you know, there's, again, we should do a podcast just on that. But there is, you know, you need to take, basically, you have to go after people time and time again over an extended period of time. They need to hear about it a lot of times. There needs to be multiple opportunities for them to gain information and not be prematurely asked to decide. Again, getting back to the early laggards, late adopters issue, if you force people early to make a decision and people are naturally bent towards a no. And so when you ask them, or if you kind of pressure them too early, they'll say no, and it's harder to get them, you know, after the launch. And so what you want to do is actually ease them into it through a series of social interactions that are low pressure, high vision, but low pressure environments where they're getting a chance to kind of interact about the vision of the launch, and they're meeting people from the community. Again, we need people to volunteer. What they want is relationship. They're looking for community. And so what we want to do is get them in an environment where they're developing community. And eventually what you want the penny to drop in their head to say, oh, I know a bunch of people who are involved in that thing. I want to get involved in that. But that doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen in a microwave. It definitely doesn't happen by standing up on a Sunday morning and making an announcement. It takes a long process of kind of working with people over an extended period of time to make that happen.
Yeah, that's really, so I guess we're doing that right now, right?
Yeah.
We have these interest gatherings in the town that we're launching at local spots in the town where people can come, you can invite your friends, and we're pushing that really big on social media. And I think that there's been some really great success behind that.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. Yeah, our goal is to push towards 75 volunteers, you know, which for our church is great. That's somewhere around 10%, which is a lot. And so, you know, we're pushing towards that, which is great. And Jeremy and the team that's been, you know, leading that have just done a great job, for sure.
Yeah, they really have.
For sure.
So the problem with multi-site is, yes, that we're going to have more problems.
Yeah, multi-site scales up your problems. That's the next point here. So, you know, and this is the last two kind of go hand in hand. The first one is just it's a sober reality that, you know, that by taking, you know, what you're doing and moving it into new locations, it doesn't make anything better. It takes whatever's happening in your location and just does it in more problems. So if your kids ministry is struggling in one location, it's going to struggle at least three times more when you go to three locations, if not 10 times more. It's probably an exponential curve to that. If you have a music ministry that's having a hard time developing artists in one location, you know, spreading that problem to multiple locations is just not a great idea. It's not going to help it. It's not like now it's easier. You know, if you're having problems aligning your team around vision at one location, the discord that's there will just grow wider and add as you add more locations. So, you know, ultimately, when you scale up, what you're doing is multiplying you are multiplying your problems. And so the adage that I've heard, you know, and that, you know, I've shared with people is you really have to nail it before you scale it. We've got to have a level of you know, excellence. I think I say a modicum. That's a fancy word. A
that
modicum.
So fancy.
Whoa, that's a 25-cent word there of excellence, you know, within your ranks before you replicate their model. And with all humility, I think a part of what you have to do is, and this can be hard for some church leaders to do because they're like, oh, that feels like kind of weird. But what you need to do is just with humility, you say, are there aspects of what we're doing in our ministry that are showing a level of excellence, you know, that are maybe different from the other churches in the community that we're going to? And again, it's not about comparing to other people, but it is about saying, do we, you know, is what we're about to scale, is God blessing it? Is it being used? Are we seeing, you know, a difference being made and through that ministry with, you know, ultimately in the community we're in before we'd say, let's go to a new community.
So the next point we're talking about, conditions will never be perfect for launch.
Yes.
So does that not kind of contradict what we just talked about?
Yes. I'm glad you picked up on that. So these last two points really are kind of two sides of one coin, which is, you know, so the first is, yeah, your problems, you're just going to have more of them when you launch. But then the other side of it is there really is never, you know, perfect conditions for launch. I've over the years have talked to dozens, maybe even more than that, tons of leaders who have said something like, you know, we want to launch, but there's just just, we don't really have our group stuff sorted out yet. Or, you know, we're thinking about launching, but we still have a problem within our kids ministry. And, you know, we're not quite sure about this. And then they insert, you know, some problem. Now, this, we had this at the meeting house over the years, and it became a bit of a joke. I would joke about where our launch process was, we kind of would announce in the new year, and then we would push all the way through and then actually launch in November. First weekend in November was pretty typical. You know, for us. And so what would happen is, as we were approaching the public launch, approaching the point where we were going to talk about it publicly, kind of commit, which is a little bit of, it's kind of like when you get engaged, it's kind of the point of no return. Like in some ways, the wedding is just a outworking of what happened at the engagement. And you know, when you get up, any church leader knows, when you get up and say, we're going to do this, you know, that is kind of an anxiety inducing moment. And what would happen is, as we were coming up to every one of those times, there would be internal resistance to the launch. And people would say, this is the year we just shouldn't launch. You know, and there was always good reasons. And in fact, they were right. There was always reasons why that was not the year to launch. But, you know, the fact remains that if, and so what we, you know, what we would say, eventually what happened after seeing this happen multiple years in a row, I would joke, I would say, listen, the first step in our launch process, the first thing we do, you know, that tells us that we're on our way to a launch is we first question, should this be the year that we launch? You know, we get everybody in the room and feel really nervous about the fact that we're going to launch. And then we, you know, we talk about it, we pray about it, we come back to what is it that God's calling us to do. We wrestle through it and we say, no, like, this is what God's called us to do. This is the mission that he's called us on. And then from there, you know, we actually move towards that. It's like, use the example in here, you know, when you go to jump off a diving board, it's a lot of fun to jump off a diving board, but actually your mind tells you right before you jump off, that's a bad idea. You should not do this. And if you just listen to that all day, you'd never jump. You never have the fun experience of jumping into a pool. And there is some of that truth here with, you know, launching a campus. So the fact remains that if your church is growing, and this is why, you know, sometimes people will ask me, they pull me aside in these questions, like you're saying, Vanessa, and they'll be like, you know, I'm thinking about launching, but we got these problems. And I say, listen, my bias is that you should launch. Like, so if you're coming to me and, you know, you're asking, I'm just telling you right up front, my answer at the end of the sentence is you should launch, because I really globally, just kind of at a broad culture, you know, point of view, we're just losing ground as the church. We're losing our ability and losing our voice to, you know, our ability to reach people and our voice in the broader culture. And if your church is growing, then I really think it's actually a good, your kind of demand. We need you to launch. We need you to step out and make a difference. We need you to, you know, to step out and launch. Now, I realize it does feel a little bit like you're, you know, building a plane while it's flying, you know, there, and that is a part of it that, you know, there are going to be parts of what you do that you're like, we just got to figure this out as we go along. But that is a normal piece of the puzzle. So my bias absolutely is towards you. Your church should be launching. This is the year that you should be pulling the trigger to say, let's do our next campus.
So it kind of begs the question. So if your kids ministry, or say you don't have any artists to sing on a Sunday morning, but your church is growing, launch. But if your church isn't growing, don't launch.
Yeah, so that's a good question. And again, I feel like this is now the third time I've said it in this podcast. That's a great one for another podcast. But there, you know, you need to look at carefully why your church isn't growing. So there are for sure people out there that would say, if your church isn't growing by at least 5% a year, you should not be launching a campus. And you know, there is a school of thought that would say that's just the bare minimum. Like you just shouldn't be looking at it. I don't know that it's quite as simple as that. I think you need to look at the, cause sometimes your church isn't growing cause you don't have enough seats for people. And so actually doing multi-site will peel some people off, and, that will then, you know, kind of fuel the growth. That was our case throughout, the years at Liquid Church, where we were launching campuses, peeling people out of one campus. And basically we'd peel out 150 people and immediately 150 people would come, would fill those spots again. We would then take those 150, go launch in a new location a year later, peel, or in that case, 2 years later, peel out another 150 people, take those people, go launch them somewhere else. And we were seeing the kind of aggregate growth. So yeah, absolutely. So I think the, you need to look carefully at why your church isn't growing, and look at it. If your church is growing, And particularly if you're growing faster than the community that you're in the rarefied air. And I would say you are doing damage to the kingdom of Christ if you don't launch a campus. Like the reality of it is something's happening at your church. It's like the same thing I see campuses, churches, and we talked about this before, who do one, they're like full at one service and they don't do two. I'm like, you're actually like,
it's crazy.
You're limiting your redemptive potential. There are people that are going to go to hell because you don't have two services. And why aren't you doing that? Obviously, I feel pretty passionate about that. And it's the same on this. If your church is growing faster than the community it's in, then absolutely you should stop listening to stuff about multi-site, stop reading books, just like get out there and say, we need to pull the trigger and make this happen.
Yeah. Have a meeting and sit down and execute.
Yeah, totally.
I've loved this podcast today, Rich. Is there anything else that you want to add to this?
Yeah. So actually next year in February, I'm speaking again at the Exponential Conference in Orlando, which is a fantastic conference. I'm not getting anything for this ad here. I just literally think that Exponential it's a conference in Orlando. It really is. It's the largest gathering in the world of people who are thinking about church multiplication. It is a really cool tribe. So it's people who they wake up every day and are thinking about church planning or multi-site or, you know, all different kinds of funky weird stuff around how do we reach new people. And so I'm having an opportunity again this year. I'm on a day long kind of panel discussion all around kind of a deep dive on multi-site, and then doing a topic that's on just one of these points today, which is on launching strong. How do we build a large and healthy launch core? So I'm excited about that. If you haven't been to Exponential before, you should go. It's a great conference.
I'm sitting in snow right now. I mean, yes. It just seems like it's a good decision to make. Yes. So you should go.
Exactly. Nice. Thanks so much.
Well, thanks, Rich. This is all the time that we have for today. So thank you so much for tuning in. You can see the full article and our other podcasts at unseminary.com. See you later.
Thanks so much.